I have two short readings this morning. The first one's by Robert Lawrence Smith. He writes, "Let your life speak. Have the patience to be silent and listen for the truth. Then have the courage to have the best that is in you direct your actions. Recognize that your identity is nothing more or less than the way in which you conduct your public and private affairs, the way in which, for good or ill, you let your life speak." My second reading is one of my from one of my very favorite poets, the late Mae Sarton. And she wrote, "Now I become myself. It's taken time, many years and places. I have been dissolved and shaken and worn other people's faces." And she goes on from there. So I wonder if you have a book or books perhaps that changed your life, or a book that made everything seem clear, at least for a moment or two. Or perhaps it was a painting. Like for me, when many years ago I happened upon a Pissarro retrospective at a small museum in Paris. Or perhaps it was a theater piece, like for me, when I went to a production of A Midsummer's Night Dream at the American Repertory Theater in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which made me engage with theater in a whole new way. Or perhaps it was music, of which for me there are too many examples to choose from. But perhaps this morning I will choose an occasion several years back when I was at the Unitarian Universalist Ministers Association Institute and kirtan singer Jay Utall conducted the evening vespers. That's like a evening service. So imagine for a moment 500 plus Unitarian Universalist ministers, humanist, atheist, Christian, or whatever, chanting the names of the gods in Hindi. It was amazing. Or perhaps it was a moment in nature when the clouds clear and the light shone right into the deepest part of my or your being, illuminating the darkest recesses of thought and memory. These aha moments that can bring healing, those aha moments which can turn the course of a life. For me, one of those books is Parker Palmer's slim volume, Let Your Life Speak. Its subtitle is Listening for the Voice of Vocation. I first read it when I was still in seminary, way long ago now. I'm not sure why it took me so long to think about it on a Sunday morning. Perhaps it was too precious for me. I do know that after I read it, I gave practically everyone I know and knew a copy of it for their birthday or for Christmas. I'm not sure if any of them ever read it, but or how they liked it, but for me, I thought that they should have it. But when you have an aha moment, that's one of the things you do, right? You want to tell everybody about it, sort of like Unitarian Universalism when you discover it, right? Now, we're not great evangelists, though. I had taken a class at Andover Newton Theological School, which is where I went to seminary, with a Quaker teacher and workshop leader, Margaret Benefiel, who went on to be the director of Shalem Institute, which teaches about spiritual direction and other things. The class was called Leading from within, in which she taught us how to use the Quaker Clearness Committee process for making decisions and how to listen for the inner wisdom that each of us have. I think it was in her class that I was exposed to the work and ministry of Parker Palmer for the very first time. And it was definitely when I bought Let Your Life Speak. In this authentic and wise book, Palmer invites his readers to enlist their inner teacher and follow its leadings toward a sense of meaning and purpose. Telling stories from his own life and the lives of others who made a difference in our world, he shares insights gained from darkness and depression, as well as fulfillment and joy, illuminating a pathway toward vocation for all those who seek the true calling of their lives. Or just for those who are wondering what to do next, perhaps, kind of like Weird Al Yankovic. Had a lot of wonderings, didn't he? Palmer grounds this work in disclosing his own dark night of the soul. It's very authentic. And the importance of knowing our shadow sides, our liabilities and failings, along with knowing our gifts. Parker is the founder and senior partner emeritus of the Center for Courage and Renewal. What we need in these times, it seems to me, courage and renewal. There is an old Quaker adage, "Let your life speak," which spoke to Palmer when he was in his early 30s. It summoned him to a higher purpose, so he decided that henceforward he would live a nobler life. Good idea, right? He says, "I lined up the most elevated ideals I could find and set out to achieve them. The results," he writes, "were rarely admirable, often laughable, and sometimes grotesque. I had simply found a noble way of living a life that was not my own, a life spent imitating heroes instead of listening to my heart," end quote. Over many years, Palmer came to understand that learning to let his life speak means living the life that wants to live in me. I'll say that again. Living the life that wants to live in me. It involves creating the kind of quiet, trusting conditions that allow a soul to speak its truth. It means turning out the noisy, preconceived ideas about what a vocation should and shouldn't be, so that we can better hear the call of our wild souls. It means asking the question that Mary Oliver does at the end of our familiar poem that all you use love, The Summer Day. Doesn't everything die at last and too soon? Tell me, what is it you plan to do with your wild and precious life? Or the question that the poet William Stafford asks in a poem entitled, "Ask Me." Sometime when the river is ice, ask me mistakes I have made. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. I love that. Ask me whether what I have done is my life. It means letting our life speak its own words, sing its own song, paint its own landscape, script its own piece of art reflecting shadow and light, light and shadow, writing your own poems, whatever that might mean to each one of us. Palmer was a gifted academic who had combined a college teaching career with community organizing. He took a year's sabbatical from teaching to live at the intentional Quaker community of Pendle Hill. Instead of leaving at the end of that year, he became the community's dean of studies and remained there for 10 years. Those twists in the paths we take. He chose a road less traveled, away from the prizes of higher education, a high-profile career to which everyone around him thought he was going to do, that he was destined to one he felt called to instead, and in which he ultimately made a huge contribution, more as a writer than a leader. You may know him from his book, The Courage to Teach, or from his Healing the Heart of Democracy, The Courage to Create a Politics Worthy of the Human Spirit. Seems to me I should reread that one. I was caught up in the concept of Palmer's book, that reflection on your life story through the concept of vocation, as I was making my way through seminary. It's a kind of a time that you think about these things. I went to seminary, I thought, to inform the work I felt called to with elders. To the chorus I founded in 1988, the Golden Tones. For a number of years, I had tried to figure out how my gifts and interests combined with the needs of these elders I was working with and with the wider community of Wayland, Massachusetts. And it had merged to be so successful, ultimately by the time I left in 2008 after 20 years, being made a best practices of the Creativity and Aging Initiative of the National Endowment for the Arts. I was struck early on when I was doing that work, before I ever realized that it was for me ministry, that it felt like the life that wants to live in me. The life that wants to live in me. Starting the Golden Tones had not been part of my life plan. I was singing in a rock band at the time and was youth director at First Parish in Wayland. It was not a vocation I really chose, but it came from within. And it certainly didn't come with financial benefits. Moreover, many of my friends in the music business actively looked down on what I was doing and were pretty vocal about it. They would say things like one person did, "Why are you wasting your talents singing with these old people when you could be performing at Carnegie Hall?" I loved elders, so I was very happy there. Parker suggests that individuals are most authentic when they follow their natural talents and limitations. I have to say that I felt the most Maddie when I was standing in front of the Golden Tones, waving my arms around. And I felt most in the flow in those moments, with amazing moments of intimacy and ultimacy, which occurred with regularity, walking through and with these folks in their later years who were trying to find the meaning of that passage of life. My father-in-law would say, la troisième âge. I truly felt what I had found, what I was meant to do, that I was speaking with my life, and I was listening to it the best I could, but it was not easy. When I went to seminary, I was still finishing up a master's in elder studies, but had come to realize that that was not it, that academic approach to aging was not it for me. And I continued to ask myself then, what am I going to be when I grow up? Of course, I was sort of grown up at the time. Once I started Andover Newton and the endless paperwork it requires to go on the path to ministry, I still wasn't sure that I wanted or needed to be ordained. But I did know that this was the place that talked about meaning. I felt called to ministry in the community with these people, these golden tones, in that setting, in that place, in those days of community ministry. I was always answering the question about why this chorus was a ministry. Now it would be called an entrepreneurial ministry, and there are many more forms of community ministry in our movement. It sometimes felt like an uphill battle, and then I had to grapple with my shadow, those liabilities and limits that I had, as we all do. But I continued on in perseverance and felt a drive to serve in this way. Palmer's book helped me to understand a new way what this drive was, why I had the dark nights that I had, why I kept coming back to the voice in here, which was calling me to be the person I was born to be. Palmer tells a short Hasidic tale that maybe you've heard. Rabbi Zusna, when he was an old man, said, "In the coming world, they will not ask me, 'Why were you not Moses?' They will ask me, 'Why were you not Zusia?'" If we're going to speak with our lives, walk our walk, and talk our talk, we need to listen to our lives. Our lives, as Gandhi said, are experiences with truth. How do we do that? Since hearing one's calling requires introspection and self-knowledge, I, for one, use my meditation practice to sit with all of these things. Palmer encourages inner work, such as journaling and writing and prayer and meditation. He believes that what we need to know about ourselves is all there, buried under layers of shoulds and oughts. He says, and I quote, "In our culture, we tend to gather information in ways that do not work very well when the source is the human soul," end quote. Going deep into ourselves won't be found in a Google search or a self-help book on self-actualization. We should be listening very deeply to our lives and revisiting what maybe called us in our younger years before all those layers piled up. So I ask you, what gifts do you remember having that you have left behind before you might have been told you were not good enough or not smart enough or not gifted enough or not whatever enough? Recognizing that his philosophy is at odds with popular, essentially American attitudes of self-actualization and following one's dreams, Palmer calls vocation a gift, not a goal. That statement was an aha moment for me, that vocation can be something that lifts out of your life organically. This gift can lead to a path of authentic service. And he quotes another favorite author of mine, Frederick Buechner, who asserts, when he defines vocation, as the place where your deep gladness meets the world's deepest need. For me, that's where my birthright gifts and talents, those I was born with through no effort of my own, mesh with my Unitarian Universalist values and bring those values into the world, all the while being Maddie, my version of a minister, my version of a friend and a neighbor, and so on. Centering love. And even that wasn't static, as I eventually discerned that I was called to serve three different small Universalist congregations after I left the Golden Tones for my remaining working years. the last one being down the way in Santa Paula. Parker says it more eloquently than me. One last quote from him. Vocation at its deepest level is, this is something I can't not do. For reasons I'm unable to explain to anyone else and don't fully understand myself, but are nonetheless compelling. Vocation is something I can't not do. So I ask you this morning, what are you called to do? What birthright gifts have you left behind to make a living or to fit in? How can this beloved congregation support you in your quest to speak with your life? How will you become your true self? Tell us what you plan to do with your wild and precious life.